I have a friend I call a sophisticated hippie. I don't know why, except that I just can't find a better description. I say hippie because he sort of follows that style. He doesn't believe in an 8-to-5 routine. And he wears some very exotic beard cuts. And his clothes, although they're made of very excellent material and fine tailoring, are certainly a little different. I suppose you could characterize them by saying they were comfortable. And sometimes I envy him, especially when I have a necktie tied around my neck, because he looks so comfortable, and he is. As he grew up as a boy, he was a member in the church, of a church where I belong. I guess people sort of felt that he was kind of a sissy because he talked with such preciseness and his diction was so beautiful. He learned it from his mother. As a matter of fact, he said he had to learn slang before he could get any friends. But people sort of avoided him a bit, and I used to befriend him, and because I felt kind of sorry for him. I felt he was kind of a loner by himself. And I suppose he felt a little closer to me than some others. And I hadn't seen him for years or heard from him. And one night, the telephone rang, and the man who answered when I said hello said, "Guess who this is?" Well, of course, that is not designed to gain friends as far as I am concerned. I'm far too busy to play guessing games over the telephone. And the person who does that to me is liable to get some rather weird answers. So I was just had a minor irritation until he told me who it was. And then I was real happy because I hadn't heard from him in a long time. And I could have been happy a minute earlier, you know, if he had just told me. So I said, "Where are you staying?" And he said he hadn't checked in yet. And I said, "Well, you better check in out here. The rates are better." And my wife was just clearing the table, and I said, "If you hurry, I think the restroom is still open." So she paused between the dishes, and so he said, "Okay, be right out." And I told him how to get there, and my wife asked who it was, and I told her, and she said, "Oh, great, is he coming out?" And I said, "Yeah, he'll be here in about 20 minutes. When he drove up into the driveway, he was driving a Citroen, which sort of matched him. It's no offense, I'm sure. He said it was a marvelous car. Must have been, he said, he had three to keep one running. But they still looked like a committee put them together. And, well, like I say, it kind of matched his style, the dress. I hadn't seen him for years, and here he was with it. He came in, was established in the guest room. And he has been a lot of places and does what he wants to do, and so my wife and I sat and listened to him, and he kept us entertained as he was eating. And this went on until bedtime. And we enjoyed every minute of it. I'm sorry I don't have tape recordings of some of the expressions and the way he expresses things, because they are so unusual and so succinct and so to the point. Well, for instance, he said one time, "Isn't it amazing how people accept new ideas so negatively?" It's a brief example of how he talks. The next morning when I came by the room, his door was open. There he was sitting with a Chinese jacket on with a big dragon draped across it, sitting there reading. And I said, "Good morning, have a good night." "Oh, yes, wonderful." I said, "We're going to eat pretty quick." He said, "Okay," went right on reading. I went out in the other room. My wife, pretty quick, says, "You better call him because we're ready to eat." And I called him, and out he came. Had on a pair of shorts and this dragon jacket and a pair of thongs. He was real comfortable. Sat down at the head of the table. We had the blessing. And we started to eat, but you don't have to wait long because he'll bring up something. And all of a sudden he said, "I think Christians are very impractical." That isn't exactly the word. What is the word for not doing things logically? Illogical. Yeah, that'd be it. And I said, "Okay, how?" "Well," he said, "when we sit down at the table to eat physical food, we eat until we're satisfied, don't we?" Well, I admitted that we did, and sometimes we stay a little longer than that. He says, why don't you do that with spiritual food? He said, did you ever stop to think when we go to have spiritual food in the morning, we open the Bible, we look for a real short text, one we can read fast, we have a real quickie prayer, and down the road we're going to the office. He said, you don't eat breakfast that way. Why do you eat your spiritual food that way? Now, he said, I do. He said, I eat until I'm satisfied with spiritual food. He said, if it takes 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, hour, half a day, all day, I'm going to stay there until I'm satisfied. Well, now he's getting this too much for me. And so I said, now, wait a minute. I can't do that. I've got to go to the office at 8 o'clock. And he said, yes, you do, but I don't. And he said, the Lord provides for me. Last night I had this marvelous bed and I had this fine food. Yeah, the thought crossed my mind too. But then on the other hand, how do I know that the Lord wasn't using me to provide for him? So I let that one go. We used to see him from now and then. We would just give him a key to the house and say, you know when we eat and you know where the refrigerator is and so. And we'd come home sometimes and there'd be the key and a little note, thank you, see you again. And it'd be 3, 4, 5 months. It was a sort of an interesting pattern. One day a man said to me, have you seen so-and-so? And I said, do you know him? He said, yes, he stays at my house on the way to yours. I said, do you resent it? And he said, man, no. Do you? I said, I should say not. We look forward to it. So we hadn't seen him for quite a while. And so this particular night, the familiar phone call said, you better get out here. The restaurant's about closed. And 20 minutes or so later, here he showed up. But no Citroen this time. Had an older model Buick, as I recall. So after he was established in the guest room and came out, I said, what happened to the Citroen? Well, he said, a funny thing about that. He said, last time I was here, I was going up the Columbia River Highway after I left, and that's when we had 75-mile-an-hour speed limits up there, and I guess he was doing that and maybe some more. He said, I don't know what happened. He said, either I got in the loose gravel or I fell asleep. He said, I don't know. He said, all of a sudden, all I know, that Citroen started going around and around like a pinwheel. And he said, I'd bang one guardrail. It's divided up there, you know. I'd bang one and I'd lose a piece of Citroen and bang the other and lose a piece. And so I was loosening the front and the back and the front and the back as I was going around. I wondered if it was ever going to stop. And there wasn't too much left, front and back, when finally it came to a grinding skid right in the middle and was crosswise of the white stripe. So there he's sitting calmly, not too much in front, not too much behind. A lady was following him in the car, and when she saw this big spin out, she, of course, got off to the side as quick as she could and stopped, and she jumped out of her car and came running up to him. And there he's sitting there, real calm, and she said, are you hurt? And he said, no, he wasn't hurt. Do you want a cup of coffee? No, he didn't need a cup of coffee. Are you sure you're not hurt? And he said, no, lady, why? And she said, blah, blah, blah. He said, what do you mean? Blah, 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 blah. And she said, the accident. Old lady, he said, that happened a minute ago. And she said, how can you be so calm like that? She said, me, I would be just crawling up the wall. He said, lady, you can't do that. He said, you can't do anything about what's happened if it was only a second ago. So why waste your time thinking about it? I'm sitting here trying to figure out whether to go to this next town and buy a car and haul all this junk back home. Or should I go up here and ship it back and take the bus? I looked across the table at my wife and I said, I didn't say anything. I just nodded my head, and she nodded hers. And we got the message. Many times people, and I know most of you, have felt exactly the same way. After something has happened, you will say later, if I could have thought clearly right at that particular moment, I would have done things differently. Haven't you? Why didn't you think clearly right then? Because emotionally you were all upset. The accident had really upset you, and you did not have control of your feelings, so that you couldn't think clearly. But you can think clearly if you understand the principle involved here, that you can't do anything about what's happened if it was only a second ago, but you can do a lot about the future. And so here I have an X marked on the board, which is X marks the spot where it happened. Doesn't make any difference what happened. It could be an automobile accident. It could be you have company and you drop the lasagna in the middle of the kitchen floor, halfway from the stove to the table. Anything is X. But draw a line beside X as quick as it happens and forget it. And then concentrate on the future. because you can't do anything about what's happened if it was only a second ago, but you can do a great deal about the future. Some months later, I received a call at the office one day. My wife said, I just had an accident. And she sounded rather calm. And I said, are you hurt? And she said, no. And I said, that's good. Where are you? And she told me. And I said, I'll be out. So I drove out there. And I'll admit that the car didn't look the same as it had that morning. She had met some lady in the intersection. The lady tried to get in our back seat without getting out of her car first. And, well, you get the picture. But she seemed unusually calm, and normally things like this would have bothered her, and she would have had a lot of regrets. And she said at that particular time, you have no idea how that principle helped me. When those cars ground like that, she said, I thought, oh, and then she said, I remembered, you can't do anything about what's happened if it was only a second ago. So why worry about it? You can't straighten the car out. Somebody else has to do that. And so she asked a lady if she was hurt. No, can we drive the cars? Yes, let's get them out of the intersection. They got them out. Exchanged telephones and addresses and whatever. And then let's see, what do you do next? Well, you call Mel. Well, Mel doesn't know what to do, but he knows a fellow that does know what to do, so we take it down there. And that's what happened. And several times she has repeated this to me. You don't know what that principle did for me. It just suddenly makes a calm person out of a person that's completely upset. It makes a person who is in control of his emotions at a time when most people aren't in control. Now, we have been saying through this series that close beside these, the devil always has a trap set, and he has a beauty set here, and I want you to notice it. If the devil can get us into the habit of fretting over the problems which plague our daily lives, notice, if he can get us into the habit of constantly fretting over these things, always looking back and regretting and feeling terrible and saying, I wish I hadn't done this, I wish this hadn't happened, then it will be easy for him to transfer this habit to our spiritual lives, and we will worry about our past mistakes and sins, and we won't believe they've been forgiven. And so he uses these little unfortunate things that happen to us all the time in order to condition us for the other. And we have always thought that they were two separate things, and they're not at all. Gets us to looking back. The strange thing about it is that this great principle was given by Paul in Philippians 3:13, but I never saw it in a practical setting. What did Paul say? Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I reach toward the mark of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So my friend said, you can't do anything about it anyway, so forget it. And Paul said, forgetting those things which are behind, reaching forth unto those things which are before. There it is. What do you actually do? How do you put it into practice? Someone's going to say, well, that's easier said than done. But no, it isn't. It can be done. I know from personal experience. Let's talk about the practical part of the material first. First, we adapt or readjust. That's number one. There will be three parts to each one of these. First, adapt or readjust. Quite obviously, in the example I gave of my wife having an accident with the car, there had to be a readjustment. She was going shopping. Well, not in that car, she wasn't. Not anymore. So she took me to the office, and she took my car and went shopping. Adapt or readjust. Well, we had to do that about a year ago. It was a quiet Friday afternoon, about an hour before sundown. I was ready for the Sabbath, but I was reading a book. And my wife was in the kitchen doing those last little things, whatever ladies do, finishing up in there, when I heard this terrible crash, and there was a pot of beans landed right in the middle of the kitchen floor. Now, she's the type of person who never puts a kettle with a handle in the refrigerator. She's one of those people who take a large dish of something, and the unused part of it, it goes into a smaller dish, and in a smaller dish, yes, I see you ladies laughing. Why do you do it? There's got to be a reason behind it. Well, someone said the other day, it's to conserve room. Well, okay. But it sure adds a lot of dishwashing in my book. Well, at any rate, she's that type of person. But a pan with a handle, never. But on this particular day, the beans were going to go from the refrigerator directly to the stove just quick as we came home from church, because we had something to do after that. And so it would be just easier rather than transfer things back and forth to just reach in, take it, put it over here on the stove. She still says she doesn't know how they came out of the refrigerator. She says she opened the door and out they came. Well, at any rate, I looked out there and I put my book down, got up and walked out. And without saying anything, she walked over and picked up some cleaning materials and handed me part, and we started. Oh my, those beans. You ever see beans go around corners? They were clear around the corner in another room, and 6 weeks later I found another one that we missed someplace. I can't imagine how it got there. I've only thought since, I'm glad I didn't eat those. They were certainly lively, I'll tell you. We're cleaning up the beans, and she says, do you like Campbell soup? And I said, yes. And she said, that's what we're having for dinner tomorrow. You see, you have to adapt or readjust. And I saw a hostess carry this out so beautifully not long ago. She had one of those tables that was set in such a beautiful way that it was almost a shame to sit and eat, because it was like spoiling a piece of art. You know what I mean? On it she had these tall, narrow-necked goblets, and they were filled with grape juice. And just as we sat down, she reached across to put something down, and the sleeve caught one of those, and that beautiful lace tablecloth, that grape juice just went all over everything. I'm sure that every person sat there shared with me that the deep feeling of sympathy for this lady who wanted everything exactly right. I couldn't help but wonder, how's she going to react? And she simply said this, my, I do get careless now and then. And smiled, took a napkin, laid it across it, and said, be seated, everybody. And everyone fell at ease. Here was a woman who knew how to control that feeling at a time when it was very difficult. But she made the adjustment, the readjustment, or the adaptation. Number two, under the material things to do, take steps to correct. Now, if you come down the stairs and one of the youngsters has left his roller skates at the bottom, and you make like one of the flying Walendas of high wire fame, your bones aren't going to take that too long. So I would suggest that you teach the children to put their toys away in their roller skates. It would be rather stupid for a person to allow the same situation to happen over and over again, to have accidents. Common sense would say that you should take whatever steps that you can to correct what caused the accident in the first place. I think that everyone would agree with me on that. Number three, I'm sure you know what it is. Forget it. It isn't going to do you any good to remember it anyway, unless you want to laugh about it. And isn't it amazing how many times in the future, something that's rather serious at the time, we turn around and recall it and we laugh about it? Yeah, let me tell you what happened to me one time. Let me tell you what happened down here. And the whole family enjoys it. And at the time, it seemed like a major disaster. So after you have taken steps to adapt or readjust, you've taken steps to correct, then the thing to do is to forget it. Okay. Let's transfer it over to our spiritual lives. Remember now, the devil is trying to condition us. In the spiritual life, first, we've made a terrible mistake, a sin, whatever. Ask forgiveness. 1 John 1:9 says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And what will God do with those sins after we confess them? First, put him in the bottom of the sea. That's a long ways down. He'll put him as far as the east is from the west, and that's a long way. Although they're like scarlet, he'll make them white as snow. So, what is number two? Believe that you are forgiven. You have asked forgiveness. Believe you are forgiven. I see some of you already know what number three is. Forget it. If God is going to forget it, why don't you? Remember, the devil will want you to remember. He'll want you to look back with regret. He'll want you to look back and say, look how terrible you were. But you need to remember that Jesus Christ came and died on the cross of Calvary to take care of those sins. And the debt is all paid. God doesn't want you to carry that around on you any longer. So you have asked forgiveness, you have believed that you have been forgiven, and now you have forgotten. I'm deeply sorry that I do not have the name of the lady who shared this most beautiful quotation with me. One day following a meeting, she came and said, I think you might like this, and she showed it to me, and I took a quick look. And I was very busy at the moment, and I handed her my book and a pencil, and I said, would you please copy it? Would you have time to copy it? She said, I'd be happy to. I was busy talking to some other people, and when I looked around, she had copied it. The book was lying there, and she was gone. I didn't even have the opportunity to thank her. I only remember that she said, I copied it from a wall, and that has me intrigued yet. What wall? Where? She said it was anonymous. But I want you to listen. There are 2 days in every week about which we should not worry. 2 days which should be kept free from fear and apprehension. One of these days is yesterday, with its mistakes and cares, its faults and blunders, its aches and pains. All the worry in the world cannot bring back yesterday. We cannot erase a single word we said. Yesterday is gone. The other day is tomorrow, with its possible adversities, its burdens, its large promise and poor performance. Tomorrow's sun will rise either in splendor or behind a mask of clouds, but it will rise. Until it does, we have no stake in it, for it is yet unborn. This leaves only one day, today. Any man can fight the battle of just one day. It is only when you and I add the burden of those two awful eternities, yesterday and tomorrow, that we break down. It's not the experience of today that drives men mad. It is the remorse or bitterness for something which happened yesterday and the dread of what tomorrow may bring. Let us therefore live but one day at a time. In Ministry of Healing, page 253, the servant of God pens these words, let the fresh blessing of each new day awaken praise in our hearts for these tokens of His loving care. When you open your eyes in the morning, thank God that He has kept you through the night. Thank Him for His peace in your heart. Morning, noon, and night, let gratitude as a sweet perfume ascend to heaven. Isn't that beautiful? Thank Him for His peace in your heart. Morning, noon, and night, let gratitude as a sweet perfume ascend to heaven. I think it might be well if each one of us would make a pledge. Maybe the pledge could go like this. With God's help, I will try to forget the happenings of the day that is past, whether good or bad, and greet the new day as the best in my life. Why do we say forget the happenings of the day that is past if it was a good day? Because if it was an unusually good day yesterday and things don't work out quite so good today, they're going to see it seem that much worse because we're going to be measuring everything by what happened yesterday. As some people measure today by the good old days, so-called. But they weren't all that good. It was just a different set of problems. That's all. With God's help, I will try to forget the happenings of the day that is past, whether good or bad, and greet the new day as the best in my life. Or as my friend said, you can't do anything about what's happened if it was only a second ago. So forget that and concentrate all your energy on the future, because you can do a great deal about that. And he was only echoing what Paul said when he said, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I reach toward the mark of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.